I've been listening to since, I guess, 2002, 2003, and he's just a wonderful, wonderful speaker, an example of the power. You know, I'm really grateful to have him in my life, even though it's mostly through tapes, you know. But, you know, we do talk on the phone sometimes, and he's a great guy. You know, he's a great guy. And, you know, Mickey, I don't know too well, but I know that he was he was the one who started Fellowship of the Spirit. I asked him to talk about that, the history of Fellowship of the Spirit. And I'll tell you this, I've talked with him on the phone, and every time I talk with him, I get this calm feeling, this calming feeling. You know, it's like the sunlight of the Spirit. I don't know what it is, but he's got that effect, and, you know, that's for real. And Marie M. is going to be the Al-Anon speaker. I don't know where she is, but, oh, there she is. You know, let's give a round of applause to the speakers. And we're really so, so grateful. Jack the Marine is going to be here tomorrow. And enough out of me, and we'll have them start off any way they want.
Right. Okay. Thanks. We'll start out with introductions. Thank you very much, Harry. And my name's Mickey. I'm an alcoholic. And it is it's a joy to be with you. There are old friends here and new friends here. And it's a pleasure to be in Queens, New York, on this beautiful evening, talking about life and death, being saved from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And give Peter a moment to say hi, and then I'll get started.
I'm Peter, recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Peter.
Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank Harry for this kind invitation to Mickey, myself, Marie, and Marion to be here to share this weekend with you and to the committee who put this together. So if we can just give it up for the committee and say thanks for everything. It's a treat for me to share this weekend with my sponsor, Mickey, and seeing some old friends and I'm sure a bunch of newfound friends. I'm thrilled to be here, and we hope God leads us through this book. We'll kick it around, share our experience. We'll be coming at you experientially with this book to illustrate what has happened to us as a result of this book, A Power Called God and a Sacred Fellowship Called Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm thrilled to be here and get to share with you guys.
Thanks, Peter. So Harry asked if I would, what we're going to do is I'm going to share a bit of my story with you so that you have some confidence that one of the facilitators this weekend is actually alcoholic. So we're going to do that, and we'll each do that. But Harry asked me if I'd share with you a little bit about the origins of the Fellowship of the Spirit conferences. And I would love to do that. What happens is that Don Pritz, who some of you may have known, and if you didn't know him, you may have heard him on tape. And unbelievable gentleman and a lifelong, practically lifelong friend of mine and Marie's. And Don and Marie and I talked about the fact that we would be invited to conferences around the country, and they were more intimate. They were more like this size than what we had in Colorado. What we had in Colorado was like 1,500 people show up at the state convention. And there were overflow rooms. There was videotape piped in and everything. And I'm going, we often have this great experience to be able to come up and shake people's hands and say hello and get to know some people in these other conferences, but we don't have that in Colorado. What do you say we give that a shot? And so I understand you had Gary B. out here, I don't know if it was last year or year before, with Bob O., for those of you who came. Well, it's one of those weird stories. We're sitting on Gary's kitchen floor in his double-wide trailer in Indianapolis talking about this idea for this conference. And Gary's from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and lived in Denver for years, and that's where I met him 40 years ago. Pardon me. And we said, well, all right, we're going to go back to Denver. We're going to talk to Don, and we're going to get this thing rolling. And I said, Don, if you will provide the man and woman power to get this thing pulled together, Marie and I will go and find a hotel. And we each kicked in $250. We put up $250, and Don put up $250, and we started the first, what we called the Breckenridge Conference in Breckenridge, Colorado in 1993. And I came up with the theme for the first conference, and the theme was the Fellowship of the Spirit, because I feel so strongly. It's like if you're in the Fellowship of the Spirit, you know it. And we look for each other. You have to forgive me this weekend. I am very emotional about this. How do you tell somebody how you feel about being given your life back and getting a chance to be useful? That if we die tomorrow and we go across the river and we're talking to our boss, and he can say, did you do anything for my kids? And we can say, we tried. You know, we pitched in. We gave it a shot. So the Fellowship of the Spirit was the first year theme, and that name stuck. I didn't expect it to. Like everything else with this conference, we did not know what the heck was going to happen. We just started it. So I had this idyllic vision of people coming to the Colorado mountains. We would have a few speakers. You could bring your family. We could, you know, you could walk around, enjoy the mountains, and it was going to be like that. And then Don says, why don't we have workshops for the steps? Now he's complicated my idea. Which turns out to be the heart and soul of the Fellowship of the Spirit conferences. Workshops on the steps. This book, these steps, as they're written and supported in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, are life itself. Huh? So we went that way. What started out, I thought we're all going to be walking around, maybe with flowers in our hair. It's an old hippie thing, but whatever. Turned out to be you don't have 2 seconds to turn around before you're in another workshop with people from all over the country. And then something started to happen that was really interesting. We would have, I remember going, we had people come from different sections of the country. So we had people coming from Louisiana. And so the Louisiana folks would be making, you know, shrimp etouffee and jambalaya, and they'd be cooking these meals in their room. And the people from New Mexico would be coming up from Santa Fe and Taos, and they'd be having enchiladas and God knows what Mexican food in their room. And we started bouncing room to room and being with each other. When you'd get into the room then, you would see a girl. I remember a girl, a young woman from New York, leaning over to a guy from Lafayette, Louisiana, and saying, now, where did you find that fourth column in the fourth step? Well, where's that? And we started to watch this thing happen, and it was noteworthy because we had people, we call it the miracle on the mountain. We have people who come, and I tell people, the Fellowship of the Spirit in Colorado, there's no secret handshake. We don't wear the same letter sweaters. We don't do any of that stuff. It's all right smack out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But something happened in that, and it continues to happen today, where people will come up and they will find their programs get kick-started. They just get this breath of fresh air. And there's people from all over the country. We've had people come from Vietnam. We've had people fly in from London, Australia, just to be with us in the mountains. It gives me goosebumps, right? And they're coming in. What are they coming for? This is a head scratcher because I can be really very left-brained sometimes, and I want to figure it out, and I can't. Other than the fact that God has blessed us, we're trying to do what he's asked us to do, and it is out of the book. It's not out of the book like I'm going to beat you with this book. It's out of the book like I'm going to love you with this book. I'm going to share with you what this book and the principles and practices in it have done for me. And then we have panels, and we have panels from people from all over the country, all over the world, sharing their experience with what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So as a little bit of history for the Fellowship of the Spirit, we used to have 60 people come down from Seattle, Washington, to be with us, and we looked forward to them every year. And they'd come down like this big gang of joy and chaos. And then the traitors turned around and started their own. That is a complete misstatement. There are now, I think, about 11 Fellowship of the Spirit conferences. There's Fellowship of the Spirit Dublin. They just started one in Johannesburg, South Africa. We've got one in the Ukraine. The people in Mongolia are very interested about this. Do you understand why I sit down occasionally and say, what is this? What is this thing that's so magnetic that's drawing people in? It's Alcoholics Anonymous. But one of the things, I want to be careful here because this is a program of love and tolerance. This is a conference based on what's in here. There's a sense of orthodoxy about it, if I can say that. It's like, why don't we give it a shot the way it's written? What can we lose? Why don't we give it a shot like as it's written? And why don't we share with each other out of our experience for what happened in our lives as a result of having done this? So it's really catching on around the country. We have it in the South. We have it here. We have it on Mid-Atlantic. We have all of these. We don't have anything. We're not affiliated with each other. Except that we do look for each other around the country. And there are phone calls that come, hey, I got somebody who's getting sober in Minneapolis. Who do you have? You know somebody in Minneapolis? You got anybody in Lafayette? Do you know anybody in Queens? And I'm going to have a yes for that. So, Harry, that's my shot at it. And in the course of it, I can say we because we have people who will call us. We got in touch with the people from Johannesburg, and they said, how did you structure this? What did you do? And we shared with them what we have done, what we did to incorporate, to become a nonprofit organization for safety reasons and for prudence and so on down the line. So I've had the privilege of going and speaking at some of these conferences, and I miss Don. I miss him. That guy was Mr. Moonlight. I don't know. He was something else. And so that's a bit about the Fellowship of the Spirit conference. It is a pleasure to be at the Fellowship of the Spirit New York with you. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny, right? Something happens to a person who has alcoholism, who encounters this big book, and somebody who works out of this big book. The Greek Orthodox have a term for actually the Blessed Mother, and the term in Greek is Theotokos. And Theotokos means God-bearer. So literally, Mary, you know, is a God-bearer, okay? But I think what happens if we work this program out of the book is we become Theotokos. I'll tell you this, and then I'll get to qualify. Do you remember this terrible Aurora Theater shooting that happened in Denver? Well, that was a couple of years ago, and Marie and I were up with friends up at the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference. We came back, and our whole intersection was filled with news vans and journalists running around. We didn't know what was going on. We didn't know why. We didn't know that the shooting had occurred. And it turns out that Marie and I live across the street from the psychiatrist of the shooter. Okay, which we also didn't know, which has now been blasted all over the world. And so I'm sharing this with you about what it means to become Theotokos. And so The reporters would come up to us and ask us about her. She's our neighbor. So we would say she's a lovely person. She's a great neighbor, and that's all we have to say about her, period. And so the dust died down, and then one day we work out of our homes, so the garage is converted into a custom cowboy boot shop. So, amen. And so I tell people I got a convertible shop. I can just raise the door, and everybody can come in, whatever. Let's all get together. And we saw this nice young woman going across the street to knock on our neighbor's door. And our neighbor had the good sense to go into hiding because she was just being inundated. Okay. So she turned around and looked at Marie and I. We were in the shop, and she came over. And I thought, uh-oh. And she's from Texas. And I've got all these feet. They're called lasts, and they're all hanging from the ceiling, and it's what you build boots on. So I've got all these feet hanging from the ceiling. And she looks in, and she says, "Hello, are you a cowboy bootmaker?" I said, "I sure am." And she says, "I'm from Texas." She came in, and we started talking. And I'm thinking to myself, in my cynicism, in my self-protection, she's softening me up and us up so she can start pumping us for information about our neighbor. 2 hours later, we know everything about each other's lives now. She doesn't have any questions about the neighbor. And so a year and a half go by, and she says, "It was great being here." And she called and left a message, and she says, "Mickey, I want you to know that I think about you and Marie often. I don't think about you every month. I don't think about you every week. I think about you every day." She's a CBS producer. And she says, "I would like to come talk to you." And I said, "Okay." She says, "I want to put you on Sunday morning on CBS. And she says, "But it's not about the boots. It's about you." And I'm thinking, what do you want to put me on CBS? And it's taken me now. And that I met with some higher-ups, and it's not happening. And I don't think it will. But what it took me all this time, and it's taken me months to think about it, I'm thinking to myself, what does she want to talk to me for? I think she wants to talk to me because she met the God in me. It's not me. She met the God in me, which is how we are a program of attraction. Would you agree? And that's what we're trying to do, is create a God-sized hole that God can take up residence in, work for us and work through us. So that's what this weekend is about. God bless our time together. So I started drinking when I was 5 years old. I grew up in Europe, and in Europe they would give the kids wine cut back with water for the evening meal. And aren't we European? And ain't I alcoholic? You know what I'm saying? So when I got sober, I came into the club. I got sober in 1974. I have 40 years of continuous sobriety, which I'm sincerely going to tell you. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous at 27 years old for 2 weeks of sobriety. I had been drinking all my life, and I couldn't. It's like I got on a train, and I knew I couldn't get off the train. I knew it was not going to happen. I'd been on that train all my life, but I was so sick. I was so exhausted. I was so discouraged, and I wanted off the train, and I thought, if I could get 2 weeks of sobriety, I would be so grateful to you. In Alcoholics Anonymous, because I came to you because you had alcohol in your name. I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd seen a movie, The Days of Wine and Roses, in 1960-something, and they told me, people told me that AA was in that movie. I don't remember it. I could tell you how much he drank. I could tell you where he hid his bottles. I could tell you how he tore up the greenhouse. But I didn't remember that AA was in that movie. Think we're not in danger? It's right in my face, and I've got this thing, and I don't even remember it. So if I could get just 2 weeks where I wasn't that sick, if I could get 2 weeks where I wouldn't wake up and my hands would be crippled. I called a friend and said, what's wrong with my hands? He said, it's the booze, dummy. And I'm thinking, how can booze do this to my hands? I don't understand. It's like I came in from Mars or something. I did not know anything about this disease, except I would go over to the University of Colorado Medical Center library, and I'm looking up for what is it in Coors beer that's making me so sick. And I was getting close to it, to the rice. This guy cannot live. You see what I'm saying? I think it's the rice. And I found out that you had God and spirit that was going to solve the problem. And I thought, I have got to get out of here. I'm like, are they going to cure me with fairy tales? Or what is this? I'm going to die. They don't understand. I'm going to die. Don't give me fairy tales. I am going to die. So I met with my sponsor. Now, my sponsor, it turns out, was kind of like a Siamese twin, triplet, quadruplet guy, because I said, can we have lunch? He says, sure. I show up. There's like six guys at the table, always. And I tell him, guys, I've made a discovery. I'm not alcoholic. Because if you're alcoholic, you got to do this. You know what I mean? And I'm going to die. So I'm going, I'm not alcoholic. And the head thug over in the meeting, you know, was looking at me. And he said, this guy's about 6'6", and an old sheep rancher. And he looks at me and he says, really? It's great. He says, you know what? There's a bar on the other side of this restaurant. Come on over. I'll buy you a beer. I said, what? He says, seriously, come on over and I'll buy you a drink. I said, I can't do that. And he said, why? I said, if you buy me that drink, I'll go to hell. And he says, and you're not alcoholic? It was like my rear end was riveted to the chair. I could not move. And that dispelled that. And the only option that was offered to me was to walk this road. To walk this road. Fairy Taleville. Thank God, right? And so it was on this road that my life was given back to me and I got more than 2 weeks of sobriety. What was it like when I drank? I can tell you this. If you talk to any newcomer to Alcoholics Anonymous, they have a plan. Everybody's got a plan, right? Here was my plan. I had a loaded .32 automatic pistol in my top drawer, and if this doesn't work, I'm putting my brains on the wall. It was not a great plan, but it was true. And I had that gun up there for the first 3.5 years I was sober. And my wife is not alcoholic, and she had to live with the knowledge that that gun was in that drawer for 3.5 years. A suicide is not the mark of a flexible personality. I only had one plan. This doesn't work, I'm out of here. I couldn't tolerate it. And I used to be in AA meetings, and I want to put this out on the table here. I am not here this weekend to talk to you about drinking. I am here to talk to you about alcoholism. For real. This is because I got in here, and you notice how everything's competitive? Everything's... I drank more than you spilled on your tie. First of all, I didn't wear a tie, but... You know what I mean? So that makes you king alcoholic. And what am I? I'm a loser again. Well, I'm more spiritual than that guy, really. Now we got that one going for us. That's a good one. But I would sit in meetings and I'm thinking, I want to die. I'm coming out of my skin. What is wrong with me? What AA do I go to? What anonymous do I go to? I can taste the bullet. I need help. Where do I go? Who's going to help me? And why I bring that up now, and we have still not heard about Mickey's drinking, is that the drinking is like a red flag that flies. My relationship with alcohol is like a red flag that flies that tells people, because of this addictive relationship with a non-addictive substance, already we got heresy on the table, this individual has alcoholism. If this individual has alcoholism, there's a whole lot more wrong with him than the way he drinks. And I say, I'm addicted to a non-addictive substance. What does that mean? It means that 9 out of 10 people in this world, give or take, these are mother-in-law statistics, 9 out of 10 people can drink alcohol with more or less impunity. 1 out of 10 people has a deadly, addictive, allergic relationship to ethyl alcohol. And nobody's been able to tell me, how many drinks do you have to drink to catch alcoholism? Seriously. If we're going to talk about what's up, well, I drank so much I became alcoholic. Is that how it worked in your life? I was down to shoot when it started. You don't have to buy what I say. We know that. Nobody speaks for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm here to share with you my experience, strength, and hope. But I'm putting this out because I want to say something. I want to say this is a real disease. And when I stopped drinking, I ran into Mickey. And I couldn't handle him. And he thought these terrible things. And he was erratic. One minute he's depressed, the next minute he's going to run IBM. Who is this guy? And I'm stuck with him. And I got to bring him into the room. Oh, let's have a potluck. I got to bring Mickey into the room. Scared me to death. I'd be in an early AA meeting and people would say, it was a discussion meeting, Mickey, what would you like to say about this? Now I had to pull the committee inside of me for who was going to speak, because I'd been wearing so many masks for so long, trying to be whatever I thought you wanted me to be so you wouldn't reject me, so I wouldn't be isolated. So I had that going my whole life. What did it look like? I got drinking with my parents. I stole alcohol from my parents. My parents would have a party, and I would drink what they called the dead soldiers. The dead soldiers were whatever drink it was. Now the ice is melted in the thing, and we just eject the cigarette butt. Now we're going to, you know, social drinker. Social drinker. And I got kicked out of every school I went to until I got to high school. I got kicked out, but it wasn't like, let's have a parent-teacher conference. Mickey seems to be disturbed, having some trouble. It was get thee hence and do not come back to this school. And I want you to know what I did with that those experiences. I thought, what is wrong with them? Right? We are bulletproof. We're going to die behind this thing. And we don't even know we're in prison. And I got this thing. So in the eighth grade, which I also got kicked out of, I got it figured out. For the first time in my life, I found a book about a man that I could identify with completely. His name, it was a biography of Napoleon Bonaparte. Napoleon Bonaparte was kind of a runt. Corsican. And he sat back and he said, you know, he looked at the world and he says, I think I can take it. And he did a good job. Right? I read this book and I thought, my God, I'm a genius. I mean this sadly. I'm a genius and they don't understand. Sooner or later, they're going to understand that I'm a genius. Now this genius is about to get kicked out of another school because I would do things like the teacher would say something I didn't like, and I would stand up in the classroom and tell the teacher what I thought of him. It doesn't wash. And I pulled other things which I shudder about today. I was an altar boy and a vandal. And I never knew which one was going to show up. And I meant both of them. And you know, Bill Wilson, it talks about him going into the Winchester Cathedral when he was overseas in England in World War I. And he walked up to the altar and he said he knew there was a God. And I was in Rapid City, South Dakota at Cathedral Grade School. And I went in there on a hot afternoon all by myself, and I stood in that church and I stood before the altar and I knew there was a God. And I knew that the train was waiting for me at the front door of the church. I had the God, I walked out, I got back on the train, and I went to hell. I was a student of history. I'll give you an idea. They said, what were you like, Mickey? I'll tell you what I was like. I grew up in Europe. When I was in France, the flea market looked like Fifth Avenue in New York. Racks and racks and racks of clothes. What kind of clothes? Nazi uniforms. Turns out they didn't need them anymore. Helmets, decorations, swords, daggers, guns, all of this. I grew up with that. I walked across the battlefields of World War II, World War I. I got immersed in all of that. And I got fascinated because of total ignorance with the Nazis. So it's eighth grade, Rapid City, South Dakota, Cathedral Grade School. They're going to have show and tell. Can you see this one coming? So I'm going to bring my Nazi memorabilia to the... just ignorant. They headed me off at the pass. I had a reaction to this. In those days, the nurse... this was in 1960. In those days, the nurses, for instance, would have these liquid shoe polish... right, the cotton dauber at the end, and they'd put it on their shoes with their uniforms, right, and go to work. I got hold of one of these. Honest God, I'm so sorry. I just want to give you an idea. So on a Saturday night, I got one of those things, and I put swastikas in the school windows this big. In a Catholic grade school in Rapid City, South Dakota. And I showed up on Monday morning and my henchman was pulled out of class first by the principal. Now Dan's gone, my compatriot in this thing. And I know this is it. The jig is up, man. I'm going down on this thing. He never shows back up. She calls me out in the hall. I walk out. The first thing's out of my mouth, I didn't do it. She says, you didn't do what? I said, I didn't put this. Nailed. So while my classmates graduated, and you graduated from eighth grade in their suits, and the girls were in their pretty dresses, and they got to go to the first dance, I stood across the street in my vinyl motorcycle jacket, smoking old gold cigarettes and drinking grain belt beer, and the hell with you. That's what I was like. It's like I'm talking about somebody else. I was never geared to carry that weight. I was never designed by God to live that in that alienation from my own soul. And here's the kicker. I applied to two seminaries to be a priest. Please talk to me. I don't know if anybody can relate to the duality of these positions. They are completely nuts. And I really wanted to be a Catholic priest. I really did. But the train, you see, and I wish I could tell you that it was the ethyl alcohol that caused the psychosis here. It was not the ethyl alcohol. If I told you that I drank to control my alcoholism. Would that mean anything to you? I tried to get my medicine to put out the torture, and I wanted to be a good boy. I sincerely did, and I could pull it off sometimes. So that's what I was like. And it just got wetter. And the medicine didn't work. And you know, my wife talks about how she'd be in a car with me. We'd gone to the party. I get in the car. We're going home. She's driving. And I'm really friendly. She looks left, turns back to me, and I'm somebody else. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I did not know what was wrong with me. And I saw psychiatrists, psychologists. I went and talked to priests. I talked to anybody. Please help me. I don't know. I'm coming. I mean, I was sketchy. I was like this. I was in motion. So finally I got to this satellite health thing from the Denver County Hospital. They had satellite offices. And I got to go there, and how much did it cost? Nothing. Thank you very much, because I wasn't working. And I go in to see the psychologist, and we do not talk about drinking ever. I'm just bobbing and weaving over in this chair. And she says, "You seem nervous." Really? And she says, "Why don't you take this Valium?" So I'm trying to fix my hangovers with Valium and alcohol. That's nice. And I'm in there for a few weeks, and after a while now, I'm seeing her. If you've ever been under any kind of psychiatric care, you know there's such a thing as a 50-minute hour. You got 50 minutes. Go for it once a week. So I'm doing it. Here we go. I don't know. I'm just coming unglued. And she finally, I said to her, "Listen," a few weeks in, I said, "How am I doing?" She says, "Do you really want to know? If they ask you that, say no." I said, "Yeah." She said, "Mickey, you are the most negative human being I have ever met in my life." She says, "I don't know how it's possible for you to be able to walk around the streets. Whoops, time is up. I'll see you in a week." If you don't think Alcoholics Anonymous is like the greatest show on earth, the biggest gift from God, I don't know what. 50 minutes in an office with somebody who doesn't know what's wrong with you, and you don't know what's wrong with you, and you got to wait a week, I was coming unglued. So I came into AA. I called one night at 10 o'clock. Marie was out at a class, a pottery class. I was with our daughter. I drank for the first 3 years of our marriage. She was out. I called Alcoholics Anonymous, as I said, because you've got alcohol in your name. And they said, "Can you come over to the 1311 York Street in Denver?" And I said, "No, I got my daughter." And they said, "Well, look, would you like us to come to your house?" I said, "Please. Marie's gone." So she comes home right before these guys arrive at the front door. Meanwhile, I'm nervous. Like, what are the neighbors going to think? Like they wear sweatshirts with A on them or something. I don't know. Nobody gives you a blueprint for your own 12 steps. So I'm cleaning up. I don't want them to think I'm a drunkard. And so Marie gets home, and I said, "Marie, I've called Alcoholics Anonymous." And she said, and I said, "They're coming over." And she said, "Should I stay?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "We'll ask them." So the doorbell rings. These two guys are there. They come in. I said, "Listen, my wife is not alcoholic. Is it okay if she stays?" And the guy looks at her, and he says, "Can you be honest?" And she said, "Yes," and I vouched for her. And he looks at my wife, and he says, "The first thing I want you to know is you are just as sick as he is. Thank you, God." Right? Not by way of being vindictive, but by way of recognizing the fact that alcoholism is a family disease, and my wife has alcoholism just as badly as I have alcoholism, only without the bottle. And the Al-Anon family groups, listen, I'm a booster. I'm all over that. So The 12 steps started from there. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to my first meeting the next day, and God supported me. I'm telling the whole time, obviously, but I'll tell you this last thing, and then I'll shut up. I was in advertising, my first national ad agency job, because I'm a drunk. And I'm going to go see my boss, and I'm going to tell him, Bill, I know what's wrong with me. So we're going to have this meeting at the airport, and I'm there, and I'm ready, man. I got my London fog raincoat on. You know, it's the only thing on me that had any spine. We meet at the airport. I said, Bill, I found out what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to my first AA meeting today. And he just looks at me, and the guy was a telephone freak. And he just looks at me, doesn't say a word, and gets up and leaves. Here, my first official act on the way to payday and glory here is I'm going to lose another job. I'm going to lose my job. And he comes to me. He was a telephone freak, he just had to make the phone call now. So he goes up, he makes the phone call, he comes back, and he sits across the table from me. He doesn't say a word, and he looks me in the eye. He reaches into the breast pocket of his coat and pulls out the 24-hour-a-day book. Right? I had no fancy footwork. I got nothing. I'm bringing nothing to the party, and the first thing I get, I'm in God's hands, and it's going to be okay. How many of us have been waiting for that sentence? It's everything's going to be okay. And we tell each other that in here. And for 40 years, I've had the privilege of being able to tell people, it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. Follow the yellow brick road. You're going to be okay. I just love you. I'm so glad to be with you tonight. Anyway, thank you for listening. So we're going to take a bit of a break now. Let's call it 10 minutes. And then we'll get back together and Peter will share.